We'd like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of the land which this podcast is produced on, the land of the Cammeraygal people. We pay our respects to elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people today.
For the final time this year, welcome back to the SBS Championship Corner podcast. We started the inaugural Australian Championship competition with 18 teams from seven different states vying for the title. And as the weeks went by, that number continued to drop as teams were sent packing until eventually only two remained, South Melbourne and Marconi Stallions, where South Melbourne proved that Victoria isn't just good for pretentious coffee shops, beating the Stallions 2-0 and becoming the first ever winners of Australian Second Division competition. But before we unpack that, all the action in that final, let's welcome back SBS Italian's Paolo Gallo one last time. And don't worry, Paolo, the only reason we've got you here is because we're just trying to leech off the success of that FVS story. And it was blowing up on socials, man. Did you have to mute the Instagram for that?
I actually need to mute the notification because I'm still receiving notification as some people that put some comment on it, and sometimes I really want to answer, but I just left it there. And sometimes I go back and hear the stories again because of the notification remind me of this post. But thank you guys for having me back here. I'm pretty sad actually.
Are you a bit of a celebrity now in the office? You know, you walk around and
a celebrity.
Getting people to get the coffee. You know, using that video
to sign the reel, the Instagram reel. Can you sign me this?
But Adrian, to you now, and I'm not sure if you were at the final, but tell us, how did it play out from your perspective, man?
Yeah, so I don't know how I'm going to spend my Saturdays now, guys. I'm a bit sad, really. I don't know how to feel. This is our last Championship Corner show today, but just knowing that this Saturday there's not going to be an Australian Championship game, I'm not sure what I'm going to do with myself. I might just sit in a corner. Put the shadows. Might just watch some replays. I don't know,
exactly.
But no, it's been a great few months, and what an honour to be a part of this inaugural Australian Championship campaign. Hopefully, we look back in 20, 30 years when we were in our 50s and 60s and say we were there at the start, and it's kicking on to be an amazing competition. But the final, and South Melbourne will have their place in history as the inaugural champions. And it had all the hallmarks of an all-time matchup, but Marconi grinded their way to the final, relying on heroics at both ends of the pitch to secure their place in the final. And South Melbourne, obviously, with a form team of the tournament, had a pretty comfortable run to the decider. Well, it seemed an interesting paper, a matchup on paper at least, but the game didn't play out as we expected it. Marconi went down early, and that really was it, basically. The two early goals, what a goal that was, obviously, from Manny Agwek to start. And then, obviously, Marko Jankovic's header puts them two up, and didn't really look like they were going to lose from there, guys. Even if it was for one controversial FVS decision, which, if as the neutral, I was kind of hoping was a goal just for the fact of the entertainment factor and to really set the tone. But Marconi could just never really get back into it. And it really summed up, I thought, South Melbourne's campaign. They just always knew how to win. Mm. They ground it down, just like their semi-final, just like they did in the group stage. That's why they're undefeated. So South Melbourne, your inaugural champions, and congratulations to them. They really set the tone on and off the field, and I think they were rightful winners, guys.
Yeah, no, me too. And it's been a story about South Melbourne, this competition, that they've prepared differently for each team each week, and I think it really has shown. Like you saw against Heidelberg, there was definitely more of a focus on playing out and keeping the ball moving quickly. Whereas against Marconi, it was just that relentless press. Like they didn't let them breathe in their half. It was almost a really direct game from them as well. Like there was just no fluffing about. Just got the ball up there, scored. Like, look at Manny Agwek's goal. It's just one ball through and he's away.
If you think about it, the Marconi actually conceded a goal in a moment of the game that wasn't completely Marconi style, because they were trying to build up, and for a missed pass, then Manny Agwek get the ball to score, let's say, the 1-0. But I think South Melbourne overall, it was just another level of club compared to everyone else. I mean, nine game 8 win, just one draw in the last game of the group stage when everything already was done. But mainly the statistic that surprised me the most, that they didn't concede any goal in the knockout games. Quarterfinal, semifinal, and final. I mean, how many?
Defense wins championships.
Exactly. Different level, but we need to say but. That goal, the goal that Marconi actually scored, because we can see that, we can say.
Did you think it was over the line?
So you think it's over?
I think it was over the line.
I think it's over.
I, I just think the big thing for me is, hopefully they learned from this, is to get a camera across the goal line. Like, that's all you really needed. But it was at this weird angle. I don't know, as a fellow goalkeeper, I did feel for him. But I don't know how they didn't have enough evidence.
Yeah, that's the whole point. FVS is meant to be, it's like, if it's a clear and obvious mistake, and it just wasn't.
But this is the weak side of FVS. So we go back to the to the FVS. So the weak FVS completely depends by the camera's angle that you can show to the referee. So if you don't have enough camera angles, what's the point to have FVS? It's just a waste of time. Because I can understand the human mistake. So the referee didn't see the ball was going over the line. Okay, I can understand that. But if you spend 5 minutes then watching something on the video and the video doesn't show you if actually the ball was in or out, so what's the point of using
it? Well, if the final was a five camera shoot, surely, I don't know, they could maybe look at next year for a final, just bringing in an extra camera just to have it on each goal line, because, you know, you'll never know. But I look, again, I think it was, you know, I would have loved to have seen the Hawkeye technology for that, but that's we don't even have that in the A-League, let alone it's only really the Premier League that has the watch.
But look, in this kind of technology, really, you need really this kind of technology for goal, let's say goal line, to understand if a ball crossed the line, yes or no, or offside. But if you don't have enough, you cannot really understand. So what's the point to use it? Just don't use it and let the ref take his own decision. But going back what you were saying, so a final is based on moments most of the time. They did a mistake in building up the South Melbourne score. But how can the final can end up if the goal, the Marconi goal, was allowed? So first half, we finished 2-1. A big boost on, let's say, in a psychology aspect for Marconi. South Melbourne needs to readjust their his tactics. And then second half can happen everything, even if South Melbourne was way
look
better.
It was the story, I think, of South Melbourne's campaign moments. They against Heidelberg, they could have gone 1-0 down easily, penalty save. They go down and score and win. And then, like last week, they take their moments. Manny Agwek pounces on an opportunity, sublime solo effort, you know, a header moment as well. You know, something like that goes their way. Football, sports, fine margins. And I think South really showed that throughout the tournament. Remember, Sydney Olympic game, they were down, you know, right near the end, found a way. First game, found a way.
Exactly.
They always found a way to get the results, and that's football.
And I think this goal, no goal, add a bit of a salt and pepper and lemon and oil and vinegar.
bit of a dressing.
Yeah, so
it was dressing up what, you know, no one could really argue that, you know, South well and truly deserved to win that final.
Yeah. It was probably from the first kick that you could just tell that South Melbourne.
I think Marconi, you know, we got to give Marconi credit, but I just think that's when all the, you know, they've had a decent road to get there. You know, they were, as we said, the one kick away from, you know, being in history books for the wrong reasons of a 6-0, you know, and they get through, and they get through the penalties, and that all adds up, I think, in the end. And credit to, you know, Peter Sakanis for getting his boys that far, because easily they could have been out earlier, but they got to the final and they gave it a red hot crack. And but I think it might have just caught up with them all in the end. You know, it was a long, whereas South really didn't have much stress throughout, really.
And I mean, I also think that when you look at Marconi's run as well, it was, you know, the RPA game, which, in my opinion, they got quite lucky to get past them in the quarters. And they played Morton at home at the Palace, Morton having to travel from Queensland down here, and they're not really that used to, you know, going out of state for games like that. So I also say as well, and probably I almost have to take back some of the praise I gave them last week, which I thought about it a bit more and I was like, I think they might be a bit lucky to be in that final, actually, now that I think about it. And, you know, I almost think that the true final of this Australian championship was that semi, the Heidelberg South Melbourne semi final. That to me felt.
I think the best two teams were, in my book, South and probably West Zarpia would have been the fitting final for me. I think they'll look back, you know, again.
Just how many injuries they had, though. Yeah, they were down to bare bones as we were talking.
They look back and, you know, again, football's a game of fine margins. They can also look at them and go, we got lucky to get that game to extra time, that quarter final. But I think if you look back, I think they, for me, were the best two teams in the competition.
I think South Melbourne is just the one that that deserved the win, like you say, Nick, before. So they change the way to play every game. Mm-hmm. They always go for the set pieces moment. And when as soon as I saw the goal that they scored versus Heidelberg, and I thought about the conversation that we have with the Heidelberg goalkeeper. That we asked him, how are you going to prepare the long throw and something? Oh. And he was pretty confident about it. But still, South Melbourne made it in some way.
It was so funny.
It was just the same goal that they scored with Spirit. Yeah. So you say, with all the preparation, you know that they are going to do that, but they can succeed. That's when you see how good can be a team. When they actually, you know, they're going to hit their best skill is to do this, and they actually do it. And even if you prepare, you can't do nothing about it.
And if anything, I almost think it's a bit of a detriment that, you know, the teams that were trying to play more with the ball and, you know, focus on a tactical approach like that, like your Mortons and your RPs, you know, kind of got a bit hard done by throughout. But South Melbourne, to me, we were talking about the preparation and stuff. Just that tactical approach of set pieces is tournament football through and through. That's how teams go through and win. And, you know, it not only gives you another avenue to hurt teams, especially when you might not be playing so well, but they're just uncontrollable elements. Like, you know, a corner frantically, you know, in the box. Like, it just adds so much unpredictability to, you know, their game. And when you've got players as clinical as Agwerk up top, and speaking of him, you know, I know Drayden Kelly got, you know, just voted MVP of the tournament, but considering Agwerk, you know, how much time and football time he's played on the pitch and his output, how important his goals have been, is he up there for MVP of the tournament?
And then he scored in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Scored in the final.
And let's not forget his goal from halfway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think he was definitely in the conversation, but I think no one could really argue against Drayden Kelly, you know, getting it. I think he, you know, arguably was one of the best players in the tournament. Look, I was always a massive fan of Ollie Oglaw. I thought he was, you know, that guy is a freak. He shouldn't be playing at this level. He's a very good player. You know, Sydney Olympic were very lucky to have him.
And he scored twice versus South Melbourne.
Yes, and I think, but Kelly, if you watch a lot of those RPA games closely, gee whiz, he was fantastic. He was the definition of a rock at the back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, man mountain, like literal man mountain. You know, he's what, like 6'4", 6'5"?
I still have in my mind the tackle versus Marconi. Like, what, that tackle was incredible.
And his threat from set pieces as well. I think that's the thing for me, even going back to Marconi, is seeing the emergence of a lot of these players, such as young Noah Anderson, an unbelievable player who's plucked from, you know, the, you know, SD Raiders in the NPL competition youth system, and all of a sudden he's playing Nicky Cole, you know, who probably has a decent eye for talent, considering he was one of our most, you know, talented creative players of this century in Australia. Seeing Noah Anderson just showing the depth we have and what a talent he is, and what the potential for some of these players that, you know, we saw the young players even at, you know, at Apia and Marconi and across the board, even at, you know, Moreton City, every team had young players coming through. And that for me was one of the best things about the championship.
Yeah, I think it.
I know you're going to say a little story about Noah. So
no, a little story. No, go.
I just wanted to mention about that final. And, you know, whilst I don't think Marconi was really at the races, anyone, their one bright spark for me was Noah Anderson. When he came on, the game didn't change necessarily. I never thought Marconi were back in it, but they had an outlet. He was taking the game. End product was still a bit rough, shots, passes, off target, but he was trying stuff, which is more than I could say for the rest of Marconi on that day. So, yeah, I mean, for a 17-year-old to come on when your team is 2-0 down in a final away from home, it's unbelievable mentality. And, like, you know, I completely agree that he has he has it. He has it.
Yeah, yeah. He has like that. He's it's that. That's what you're saying. It's the it factor, yeah. Right? You can just, you know, when you watch players, you know, Paolo, you can attest to this as a coach as well. It's just like, just when you watch a player and you're like, oh yeah, he's got it. He's one of those players. You're just like, oh yeah.
But apparently, he might not have had it. Is that right, Paolo?
Yeah, right. You're right about what you're saying. He created the same moments when he came on in the quarterfinal with the West Tapia.
Yeah.
When him and Buzek came on, yeah. The game changed, and that's when Marconi started to play and they score and they arrive at the end. But about Noah Anderson and about this competition, what I like the most is the coverage that they have from television, from social media, and everything, because now we can know. We can see Noah Anderson, born in 2008, playing the final, playing, having regular minutes with Marconi. He's good because other kids can see these things. And I tell you a story about it, because the club where I work for, we had the opportunity to sign him when he was under 14 and under 15. But in that moment, he wasn't at the level. I mean, for the eyes of the person that was there, let's say, deciding, and is always, by experience, it's always difficult to understand by one training session if one kid can be good or not. But you need to take a decision. The trials work in this way. You need to take a decision. So he didn't make twice for our team, and we were in MPL2 at the moment, in the youth MPL2. So then he moved in a MPL3 team. So in another one, Fraser Park, he basically climbed his way back to the top from the bottom of the MPL environment, and then got scouted by SD Raiders, and now he's in Marconi. And even the coach, Tekenis, I was having a chat with him after a game, he told me, look, the first few training sessions that I saw him with us, with the first grade, I wouldn't think that he could have so much impact in our team in the very few training sessions. But then he starts to grow training after training after training, and now he has regular minutes with us in a first grade environment in a semi-professional team. And now he's one of the players that go inside, and you can say that he can create some moments in the game. But we know this one now because of the coverage, of course. So now we can tell him story. And he can give some kind of inspiration from a young player that always think that being the top tier in 14, 15 years old is the only things that matter. No, it's not like this. It's better to be in a team that can give you regular minutes, that can give you the opportunity to grow. And then you always have to, you are in time to be in a first grade player, to be in a semi-professional environment.
I think, like you said, for me, this competition puts to bed the myth that, you know, we don't have the quality of players and the depth in Australian football. I think we've seen over this, you know, this year especially, given the players that have come into the Socceroos set up and have done jobs, even through this tournament, like we've got a, you know, a catalogue of players that are just stepping up constantly, that have got talents, that are technically, you know, have players. And we've seen it. We, you know, obviously we didn't do that well the under-20 FIFA World Cup, but we won the Asian Cup. It's not as bad as people. Like people, it's crap. It's like, no. Just hold up for a second. Like we're actually doing, I think, pretty well considering our landscape and the competition we face from other sports, that we have a good, you know, the players that are coming through now have a different level of technical quality. And I think we've got, you know, a lot of potential there. And competitions like this only help the spotlight, the pressure. This is what we don't have enough of in Australian football, pressure and spotlight.
Young players, they don't see a completely, let's say, how can I say, goal in Australian football. Mm. So when they grow up in a youth environment, a lot of them, 80% of them, they try to be a player overseas. They always saying, oh, okay, I want to go in Europe because I want to be a football player. They don't see the A-League or other, let's say, stage as a real option for them here in Australia. Because, I don't know, there is too much difference. But now you can see that there is also like this Australian Championship can show you that there is something more to play for.
I think it's the championship. It's shone a much needed spotlight, a torch, you could say. You know, it's, you know, when you get those torches and you're looking for something under a lounge. For me, that's what this tournament has shown, that there is light here. There is something. There is opportunity, potential, but if you don't do anything with it, it's pointless, right? Now, that's the thing. This competition's got, unlimited potential for me.
Mate, it ended 2 days ago. Like, there's time.
No. But what I'm saying is, if you're not thinking like that, I've seen this with other sports. One time after the 2003 Rugby World Cup, Australian rugby was at its peak. The Wallabies were the biggest thing in town. And within 10 years, you can fall to your lowest ebbs and other sports can come along the way. So if you're not thinking next step ahead and you just sit on your laurels, well, that's going to run out, right? Like with this competition, if we just think, oh, this was a great first year, it's just going to be the same next year, well, we're crazy to think that, because you've always got to look to innovate and evolve, right? I think it's been a successful what the expectations were. Again, I'm obviously, you know, Nick, you're a bit younger. I'm a bit older. I'm a bit wiser. Like, you know, it's in terms of, I've just, again, like I love the optimism, but I'm just trying to bring the realism into this, because we all want this. We all love the game. We're all passionate about football. We all want this to succeed, but we have to think deeply about this. If we just pretend, I don't know.
We'll ask you, Paolo, in a second about that, because I believe the essence of that is right, in that it would be, you know, stupid to just say that this is its peak, this is its ceiling, the competition ceiling. I completely agree with that. So you mentioned about the rugby and, you know, the Wallabies, you know, becoming not so relevant even just 10 years after that 2003 World Cup. And football is a different sport to rugby. Like, football is global. It's not just subjected to, you know, parts of a country or parts of the world. The entire world plays it. So regardless of whether football goes through ips and flows in Australia, it's never going to be irrelevant. It's never going to be a sport where it's not going to be watched, viewed, you know, funded, you know, or wanting to develop. It's always going to have a place because of that.
I can give you the perspective of a person like me that didn't know anything about Heidelberg, South Melbourne. Let's say I just knew it about Appy and Marconi because I live in Sydney and because I know there are a big part for the Italian community. But I wasn't following before to start this Australian Championship, the state competition, because I work in a youth environment. I didn't know the senior perspective and something. So working on this coverage, I start to dig into the story of every single club. And I realize, you guys maybe already know it, that there are a lot of history here in Australia from this club, that once they had the spotlight by the National Soccer League competition, and then they kind of disappear from everyone's eyes because the NSL just stopped and then the A-League start, okay? But I was surprised to see how much history there is here in Australia. And I think this competition gave, again, the spotlight to this club. And I like to see the Federation of Australia, like the people in charge for this Australia competition now, sitting down, having a chat like we are doing now, and understand what's next, based on what they see also, like in people during this competition. And hopefully they can say, look, we have a pretty unique situation here in Australia, where some club, they were the top tier for 30 years, and then they kind of disappear from everyone's eyes because a new competition starts.
And to be honest, if, you know, I was old enough to remember the old NSL and go to those games, it needed to happen, right? Like, it, you know, that was needed. It was unfortunate. But I think now it's like there needs to be this perfect sort of marriage between what we call, you know, old soccer and new football.
And that's
what I'm alluding to is, how do we now... We've kind of done that. This championship's shown that you can celebrate the past, but also look at South Melbourne. You know, that is a club, for example, that has, you know, for years felt wronged and wanted to get back to a high level and have aspired and pushed hardest for this competition. They've won the thing. They continue to prove it. Let's reward them. Why are we holding back these clubs that, you know, that want to do and have changed and have shown that they can move into this new era?
I think we have a year to figure out what's next, at least, or wait to hear it. But for now, I think might be best to, instead of having an SBS moment of the week, I guess there's a couple of moments that we can look back on, a couple of little categories that I've written down here for us to talk about. So firstly, I'll ask about biggest surprise of the tournament, biggest surprise team, player maybe. because I'll start, and I'd still have to say it is Spirit getting out of a group with Avondale and Preston. I thought that the 3-3 game against Avondale showed fights. The win against Preston as well was amazing, and you know they played really good football. And for me, that was really unexpected. I hadn't watched much of them on the NPL stage, but big step up for them, and I thought that was a really, really commending. And shout out to Moreton's run to the semis as well.
Yeah, that's my biggest surprise was Moreton City, and seeing how close the standard of the NPL Queensland to NPL New South Wales, 100%. But also, you know, just how strong, you know, the difference was between Victoria and then Queensland and New South Wales. I think that was, but I think Moreton City for me.
Yeah, Moreton City. Like, I need to agree. Not just because they arrived to the semi final, but because they beat Avondale 3-1 in their place.
Yeah,
and Avondale was one of the favorites of this tournament. So Moreton City.
Yeah, no, that's I can't go past them too. And for unluckiest team, who would you say the unluckiest team? Because we've talked a lot about the bad teams, you know, and maybe it's time to focus on teams that just got a bit of hard luck, you know.
I think it's, for me, it was, you know, West Tarpeia, you know, they were the team that probably deserved to be in that final. And again, you make your own luck, and they put themselves in that position in that game. But I think for me, yeah, they were probably the ones that can look back and go, oh, this goes our way.
And mostly for the injury, because basically the front three, I was there watching Bayswater versus West Tarpeia when Jack Stewart was injured by tackle from the back that was no sense at all.
Horrible
tackle, and he was out. And then during the game, Ortiz was again injured, and then the other guy, they were scoring goal. So what's next?
Yeah.
So I would say West Tarpeia.
And I mean, a quick shout out to Wolves. I know that they put themselves in that position, but still to get 10 points and not go through, it's quite unfortunate for them. But they did.
Poor South Hobart.
Yeah, and speaking of that Wolves game against Marconi, little category I just want to shout out is sliding doors moment. Mm. If you've seen the movie, Adrian, you're a big fan of, you know, Gwyneth Paltrow?
I mean, that has to be. It's not even just for this tournament, just in general. That would have gone down in, you know, in folklore.
I think that is.
Because it's just like, that was just like a 1% chance of happening. And the fact that it almost happened, it's just even crazy that they got to that point and to how close they were. If that goes in,
Do you think Sikenis gets sacked if that goes in?
I don't
want to speak out of turn on his job security there.
I mean, if that's another level potentially of, you know, but
it's almost an unlosable game. You know what I mean?
It's just like that goes down in, you know, again for the Wolves, you know, 25 years earlier, they produced what is regarded as the greatest comeback in Australian football history in the NSL Grand Final against Perth Glory. So if they were to do that again, that would have just completely changed, you know, the course of, you know, what was a, you know, probably at the end of the day, disappointing campaign for them, and would have had a lot more ramifications as a whole.
Mm. What about you, Paolo?
Or what if Marconi win that game in an easy way with Wollongong and then goes to with Apia with a different, how can I say, spirit.
Yeah.
Let's call it in this way. Because I guess, and I want to think that the fact that Marconi went to the semis, win the game with Apia, didn't lose in the 90 minutes, and hold his back versus a team that was playing a better football in this competition at least. I think a lot came from the 5-0.
Yeah.
Because after the 5-0, like, everyone was talking just in a bad way regarding
it. Bit of a wake-up call.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So maybe
can we just add a tribute one? Sydney Olympic, if games were only 80 minutes.
That is a good one.
That's their sliding doors. Writing to IFAB about the length of football games.
I would like to find a little stat to see how many points they would have gotten if the games.
It was pretty funny, actually. Not funny for the sense of how they choked away, but it was just an amazing ability to throw away games in the last 10 minutes.
Yep. But speaking of games, I guess, game of the tournament for you guys. We've obviously got the Wollongong Wolves Marconi game. For me, though, it is that Derby dell'Italia, the quarterfinal, because to me, you know, there were better games of football than that, but it's the only one that went to penalties. You had that drama aspect to it. You had the red card. You had, You had penalty shouts, FVSs, last minute goals. It just had everything you could have wanted for a football game, especially for me.
Even the length.
Yeah.
Never ending game.
Exactly.
Even for the way that the intensity grew in the game, first 30 minutes were very stuck, and then they arrived until the last penalty after 20 penalties.
No.
So no one could see that coming.
No.
But also the game was there, Avondale versus Spirit. Actually, Spirit versus Avondale, 3-3.
Yeah, that would be my runner-up.
That was crazy.
There were some really entertaining games, I thought, not just about the football, but also the occasion. I really enjoyed Preston versus Canberra Croatia at Deakin Stadium.
That was their 3-2 comeback, right?
Yeah, and that was more so just for the setup and, you know, to see a packed house down there, that really summed up the tournament for me in terms of the entertainment on and off the field. There was a great crowd, you know, and a great football match. I think that for me, that's the hardest thing picking game because there were so many good games. I think that's the most exciting thing. We had so many good games, entertaining. Every week there was something entertaining to follow if you really got into this.
And I would say that part of that entertainment factor, you know, obviously FPS got introduced eventually, but it came down to the fact that it was just free reign in the game. You know, there was no VAR to call back for referee mistakes or errors. I wanted to ask if you guys remember it all, your most egregious, like, yellow card that was given out where you're like, how is that not a red, essentially? And so the three that I had shortlisted was one of the Bayswater's tackle versus Metro Stars. And I mean, Bayswater, in my opinion, were just lucky to not have an entire team red carded for some games. I felt like their approach was very physical.
Yes.
But it was very Italian.
They do it different out west.
And then obviously you've got the squirrel grab, which for me is probably the worst one.
Yeah.
I think that's got to be top.
One of the great championship campaigns from Thomas James. Comes over for the Wolves for a few games and then squirrel grips someone, gone. Not to be seen again.
That was a yellow card, yeah?
Yeah, that was yellow. I'm pretty sure it went to a replay, did it not as well?
What happened was the linesman was obscured.
Yeah, the lineman.
Because he couldn't see.
I still think about that, and I think about that linesman because he's seen a player fall down. He's seen one player reach his arm out in the general direction of a player's crotch. And then the other player go down on the ground. What could you possibly think has happened to lead to that eventuation that isn't he's grabbed that?
But it's like if the ball cross or not cross the line in the final.
was it complete coverage?
Exactly. You're not 100% sure that happened, actually, that one. So we can't blame the linesman.
And then I guess goal of the tournament for us, you know, is there anything? The four I have down here is Agwek's halfway goal, obviously. Satira's volley for Metro Stars.
Satira, that one was that.
The Morton team goal against Avondale, the one that Murai finishes off. Or the Conestabo volley against Avondale in that game.
So as an individual goal, I think Sotira was just amazing. Like you see that goal. I like this kind of goal in general. So when a player just don't think and just kick, and when the ball start and end up in that way. But also the other one that
against South Melbourne.
With Olympic, let's say here in Sydney.
Yeah.
That one was a great one.
When he comes down the right way.
A good rinse.
Also because there was the South Melbourne defender. I don't remember who that defender was. Like he tried to tackle twice. Yeah.
I think he gets spun around in the box.
And then he scored. Like, if you think about it, South Melbourne win the competition, concede 5 goals, I think, in the whole competition. And 3 of them came from Olympic. 2 of them came from Oli Ogla. I think he's a great goal, not just for the way that he scored.
Yeah. No, there was that for me. You know, obviously, we got many Agwek's halfway goal. You know, Spirit scored some good goals too, you know. Conestabo, remember his effort against Avondale. And
also the one that didn't score, Spirit. It was amazing because, I mean, how many goal chances, opportunities?
If we were to do with the miss of the tournament, there was that Marconi goal mouth scramble against Wollongong, which was highly entertaining. I think that was another great thing. There was just so many good goals to pick from.
I was going
to
say about that comment there about Spirit. You mentioned about Sydney Olympic, if the games were 80 minutes, if the goals were an inch wider, I think Spirit win the tournament.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like the amount of goals that go in, that even the game just snuck wide.
The game they lost 3-1 with Preston. So that game,
they peppered the goal. They peppered it.
Like Preston scored out of four shots, they scored three.
Yeah.
Like Spirit got post, crossbar, missed goal in the 6 yards.
Goalkeeper saves as well.
And if there's one more thing to branch on our report from, if next year, can we have some statistics in the competition? That would be great. That would be really nice if we could have a proper stats
this goal. Is something that I didn't like, let's say, completely about the competition. The fact that I was looking for formation, I was looking substitution, I was looking for the goals.
Even the minute the goal was scored in isn't up there, like on there, you know, for most places. It's only, yeah, I do agree that it just, that's an element of it where I thought that, you know, that's not about like, oh, you need time to develop that stuff. It's a bit like, someone's just taken a bit of a lazy day.
also because you have a lot of videos in the competition about the competition. You have a lot of, you're basically
blokes with iPads on the sideline, yet no one's taken the stats down.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to have at least the formation.
Yeah. But the last one is the last question to wrap up on is that if a player from this Australian Championship got called up for the Socceroos, who would it be? Who would it be?
Mikkola. Just because when the Socceroos need a long throw specialist.
100% agree. That is the only correct answer.
I'm the only thing I can do on a football field is good is a long throw, right? Now, it's my love language seeing people do love like long throws and giving long throws, and that is one of the great long throws that is the best long throw I've seen in Australian football.
Most effective.
It is a work of art.
Look, I would like to think about Hilton, like the Marconi keeper.
That's true.
Not just because he saved and then scored a goal that give Marconi the semis, but also because some great save. But going back to Noah Anderson, what about give a chance to this kid? But just to show the Australian Championship can be also like a platform for a player to aim and dream for the best, for the Socceroos, let's say, and also to give a kind of a purpose to young player to stay where you are and be the best player in your country.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point, because I think that kid's got it. He's got a big future.
No matter how his future is going to be, I don't know. I don't want to put too much.
No, that's our job.
Ambitions on his young shoulder. But just because he show up in this competition, yeah, young player showing up, let's give him a chance, even just to say, I saw this kid playing football in the Australian Championship, and I think he deserves an opportunity.
Mm. No, that is nice. But I feel like I'm malfunctioning. I'm getting ready to, you know, promo the next week's games, but there's nothing. There's nothing. It just says NA. Move on. I just want to say a quick thanks to everyone at home who's been listening along for these last 9 weeks, because we're allowed to sit here and talk, and you know, might be sound a little bit tiresome at times, but you guys at home are really the ones that make it happen, and by allowing us to have this platform and
thanks to all the listeners too. We had a surprisingly amount of
all
listeners.
10 of them. All 10 of them. No, nine no, of them are me rewatching. Learning.
People like, I heard you listen to you on the podcast. Like, oh, thanks. Thanks, you know.
But
I think it's all Paolo's appearances. But Themi, Cal, we've had some celebrities on here, you know, Themi and
Yumi. Yumi talking about the Japanese footballer here.
Mirna from SBS Croatian. But thanks to all the players that joined us, the coaches, and yeah, it's been an honour to be part of this, you know, competition.
Yeah, anyone who's been a part has you've all been a part of making, like, you know, and creating this inaugural Australian Championship competition, you know, everyone who's joined. So, you know, round of applause at home to people, I guess. But that is all for today's episode. So from myself, Adrian Paolo, everyone at SBS, it's bye for now.